this is your dear pal, the Joker, and you have the privilege of listening to Ear Candy from the 8-Bit Geek Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another special edition, the last special edition of this year's 8-Bit Horror Fest. Today, we are reviewing Event Horizon. We hope that you've had fun this time with us. Now, usually we got lucky once, and then we got lucky twice. I'm starting to think that this person is starting to like us. I don't know. But we got Peter Kleins that came back.
Woo!
For the third time this year, which is crazy.
Technically,
I thought we were talking about Windrus. What?
Oh. And of course, we have Windrus coming back again, who is a staple on the 8-Bit Horror Fest circuit. So,
hooray!
Circuit? We have a circuit?
A staple on what is now called a circuit.
Yes. Yeah, we're after this, we're going on tour.
That'd be nice.
The 8-Bit Horror Fest tour.
Finally.
In the city near you, we'll be playing all the local comedy clubs.
Salt Lake City from the 15th to the 16th. See us.
Live stage show.
Oh, no, not the stage. We'll be in the lobby
for as long as we can until they get us kicked out, and then we'll be in the parking lot.
Then we'll like basically Westboro Baptist Church it and hang out in the street.
We'll have loudspeakers.
Please don't associate us to Westboro Baptist Church.
Seriously.
I see them. I used to see them. Yeah, I used to see them all the time living out here because they live like an hour. Yeah, their thing is like an hour away.
Ugh.
Every time there's a concert, they just keep showing up, and it's hilarious. They haven't showed up since Fred died, though. So,
we can make some signs that say, like, God loves everybody and Westboro is stupid.
Yeah. No. Like, everyone in Kansas City is against them. Like, it's just everyone just laughs at them. And they basically just show up, stay for about 5 minutes, get yelled at, and leave. So, Yeah. No, they've worn out their welcome in Kansas City.
I think they've worn out their welcome everywhere, Kev.
We're kind of like I'm wearing out my welcome on 8-Bit Geek.
Oh,
no way.
There we go. That's how we tie it back in.
That's how we tie it back in. This week, listen, for the final week, we saved for Halloween, we saved probably the best movie that we've watched. I mean,
Hellraiser 4?
Jason X again?
Again.
Guys.
Phantasm?
Phantasm.
Phantasm in space?
Get out of here.
Yes! Tall man on a ship. That'd be awesome.
Boy, you play a good game on Mars.
We're talking about Event Horizon.
I guess that's okay.
Released in 1997. I read the book back in high school around 95.
Okay, it's based on a book?
I'm sorry?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Based on a
the author really? Did not know.
I didn't. I honestly did not know this was based on a book.
So
I think I zoned out during that part of the credits.
I would read that because it sounds like an awesome book because it's
I'm
a great movie.
I'm tempted to read that now. Okay.
I think it came
Who's
out.
Who's the author?
Stephen McDonald. Which came first?
What I don't know.
Say, there is no mention of the book on the Wikipedia page. Initially, anyway.
Yeah, this just seems like something Paul Anderson would come up with anyway.
Yeah, this isn't like a novelization thing, is it? Like
that's what it kind of looks like, maybe.
With 12 pages from the actual movie.
It says, yeah, on Amazon, it's just listed as 1997, same year the movie came out. It's a novel
by. Maybe a film adaptation.
Look at based upon the motion picture written by.
Nah.
Okay.
So you read the book.
So I read the movie.
So you read the movie.
Before I saw the movie, I read the movie.
Did you still walk out and say, the book was better?
Yep.
There were scenes on those 12 colored pages that just didn't show up in the film.
It was
a
picture book. It was a picture book. So
Wow, that sounds like a horrifying picture book.
The adult coloring book of Event Horizon.
I'm running out of red crayons.
You know what surprised
red and
me?
Steel gray.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of black pages because where we're going, you don't need eyes. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
What surprised me the most?
Such a phenomenon on so many levels, I think. Just even the filming process of it seems like a phenomenon to me.
Wait, did you not come away liking this movie at all?
I liked this movie.
Okay. I want to see where you're going.
When I use the word phenomenon, it's usually a positive thing.
Okay.
Usually.
I just don't know. In this day and age, it could lead to a negative comment. I don't know.
That's fair, because I do also consider Trump a phenomenon, so it's fair. No, I mean, I just, the act of filming it, because after I saw it, I was like, I got to read up on all this situation, and the story of how it was filmed, and how much time he had to edit it, and how the first viewing of it was like, it was so gory that people fainted. Did you not read that?
No.
Also, yeah. They got the first rating was the NC-17.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
So originally, the original cut was like 2.5 hours long, and it was so, and what happened is that he was supposed to have like 7 weeks to edit it, and he ended up, because of additional filming, only had like 4 weeks to edit it, which basically got cut down to like three. So he threw that shit together. And the first time they showed it to any audiences, it was the first time a bunch of the producers had seen the gore in it and was not expecting it. And then a bunch of people fainted watching it because there was so much gore. Wow. And they told them, they're like, you have to take some of this out. Like the blood orgy scene was a lot longer. Deleted scenes where the lady, the mom, Mama Bear, sees her kid with maggots crawling over his legs. And there's a whole bunch of deleted scenes that have now been lost to time and VHS.
Damn.
And it's pretty intense.
I don't think that
I'm going to be honest. I'll be the one saying this. I saw this movie in theaters.
Nice.
Had a big impact on me. Did not watch it for years because of that impact. I just rewatched it last week for this. I don't think it holds up. Yeah. I actually was not impressed by this movie.
I would argue. I'm going to play the opposite there. And I don't think it's not that it doesn't hold up against to time. I think it aged fine. I think the problem is we as a culture have become desensitized to gory horror movies like this.
Honestly, no, the gore is actually not my point in it. I don't have a problem with any of the gore in it. Gore is awesome, of course.
There's some cheesy stuff that I think kind of almost ruined my this viewing of it for me. It was just like paying attention to even the little things like sound effects at times I was just like,
yeah, that's true.
There's like a fight sequence going on, and it's that cheesy, bam, like wow. 80s, like, yeah, like,
yeah. There was a Doom sound effect used in that, though, when one of the doors opened. It made the exact same sound from the old school
yes,
Doom game.
I caught that.
Yeah.
So some of that kind of like, I was like, okay, that's
fair
cheesy.
Enough.
And then
fair
at the very end, the very last shot of the movie with that door closing, mm-hmm. and then it just went to black, and then the credits started rolling. I was like, well, that sucked. Like, that's a bad ending. That's just a bad ending.
It is.
It's supposed to be in, you know,
and not the ending itself, not the ending with them there, but just that shot was your final shot of this movie. That's a bad ending. This felt like a TV show. Like it felt cheap. Not again, not what's happening, but the like literal shot itself.
The actual production value of the final shot.
Well, it was edited in a hurry.
Oh, yeah, it was garbage. Yeah, it was like, and that's when we're done.
Them.
And then they had
a lot.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go first.
I was just gonna say
No, you go.
Okay. I was gonna say then the Prodigy comes on for the credit scene, and I was just like, oh, we went from like a really dark tone to like a dunk 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 dunk, but then again it was 97.
Yeah, Debbie and I were like, is that Chemical Brothers?
Right. Yeah.
You had to realize it was 1997, though. That was like everything.
Even so,
happened.
Though, we were sitting like, really? This is where we're going next for tone? This is.
I was expecting
Paul
something.
Weeksauce Anderson.
I was expecting something very like like dark and mysterious for you know,
ominous and
well, that's
ominous.
That could have.
Oh my god!
But it, again, in 1997, that was edgy. That was edgy AF.
Yeah, right but there. Like it would make it. It would make it seem like even if it ended with. Even if it ended with what's his name, the William Ware's character, and you see that, and it ended with that, and then it just had this dark tone to it, to the music, it would make you internally start to think like, holy shit, like he's still out there, like this is gonna, where is this gonna go from here? To actually make you think about the film in itself, but since it ends on that note with just the door and then the techno music, you're just like, all right, well, that's an abrupt end, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You're kind of left with, it had a great chance to be an ending like The Thing, where mm-hmm. where John Carpenter's The Thing ends and you're like, holy crap, is he The Thing? Is he The Thing? Maybe neither of them is The Thing and they're just going to lie here. Mm-hmm. Is she hallucinating? Is she predicting something? Are these guys really here? Are they not really here?
Well, that's certainly what it was going for. Like,
It's you know, going for something and reaching something are two different things.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember what your first watch of it many years? I mean, not that many. You're young. Some years ago.
Yeah.
We can be honest.
21 years ago.
20 years ago.
Watch it,
Windress. Do you remember what your walking away feeling of it was? Was it like, oh my God?
I got to be honest. I'm probably the worst person to ask this of because, when I saw this movie, the woman I was dating at the time, our relationship had kind of like hit this downward spiral. And the day we were pretty much determined to break up with each other, we're like, you want to go see a movie?
You're going to movies together out of spite?
Off actually breaking up. So we went to see Event Horizon. And
so romantic.
Yeah. So that is one of the things that's always sort of tainted the movie for me, in all honesty. But even then, like, I remember seeing it and thinking, oh, wow, oh, so scary, all that. But it also, on the rewatch, it struck me, like, when we got to the end, and it was this big mystery, and I'm like, wow! Because, you know, when I first saw this, I thought, what did I think? I have no recollection whatsoever of what I thought when I originally saw the ending of this movie. Because it kind of stumbles, because it's trying to do this big, is it not? And then we go into, whoa, techno, yeah, Grandmaster, yeah.
You guys are unforgiving about musical choices. I just was like, okay, it's the ending. I get it. I'm thinking about the fact that.
But it's important.
Yeah,
it's important that, like, you know, that beat between the movie's over. And now we're going to the credits. And that's really good. That is the moment when the audience is deciding, how do we feel about this film? Mm-hmm. And to jump from, oh my God, this dark, iffy, maybe, could it be, did they ending to, yeah, techno.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a song that would have been better fitted at the end of like Pandorum or something that we watched earlier.
Exactly. That you wanted like the dark. I mean, you look at The Thing. When The Thing ends, and you're like, "Oh my God, are they? Is he? Is he? Or maybe neither?" And it ends with this dum dum, dum dum, and that's it. We get like 10 minutes of John Carpenter just like tapping two keys on a keyboard, dum dum.
Yeah,
or even something modern like Inception, where you're just like,
"Yeah,
holy shit!" Like it did. Is it?
Did they get out?
Come on! And then it just goes to this ominous music to where you're just sitting there for at least 5 minutes, like thinking about what you just watched and going,
exactly.
I need
to see the music fits the tone of the ending. Right. So you're sort of sitting there wondering, like, you're forced to think about what did that ending mean?
Let's think about it, because the music that's in the film is very well done, I think. I thought there was some beautiful scored music within the film. So then whose decision was it to slap a song like that at the end of it? Was it also the director's choice, or was it because that
producers probably at that point, since they probably made some agreement with some band to make sure that their music was featured in the film, and that's where a lot of that music gets thrown into is the credit sequences.
That's what I would guess.
Back in the 90s, like, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, in 97, it was. I mean, that was still when movie soundtracks were selling. you know, like a movie. Yeah. A movie was a big success if it had a really good soundtrack. So I'm sure they tacked a bunch of that on too.
And 97 was kind of in that period when like a lot of the music in your credit sequence had nothing whatsoever to do with the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was the song we just sort of pasted in to sell an extra song in the soundtrack.
Because it says inspired by the movie. That's why I was so surprised. Exactly. This year, I was so surprised to see Venom come out with a title song from Eminem. And then it had an album that says with music featured and inspired by the movie Venom. And I was just like, this is happening again? Like,
it still happens. And there are some, there's whole soundtracks that are from the Hunger Games. None of the songs are actually in the Hunger Game movies, but they're inspired by the Hunger Games. And they're actually kind of good. So I'm not throwing that in the dirt or anything. I'm just saying it still happens. You know?
Fair enough.
And it can be really cool when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, when it's really just good.
Yeah, yeah, when it's good. I just don't think Event Horizon is one of those cases.
I remember.
Well, how that aside, I mean, I feel like you guys are being totally very hard on this movie when a lot of it is quite good.
I'm gonna be harder. Trust me.
I agree with. I mean, when just like, but at the same time, to just kind of solidify this point, is just when you're at the end of the movie, like that is one of the most important moments of the movie. Is how does it end, and how are you left feeling at the end? And to have something so like abrasive at the end, where it's like this doesn't fit this at all, it's so distracting that I feel like as an adult now, I guess I was probably a teenager when I saw this the first time. It pulled me out of the movie, like, and that's where it's like.
Do you remember what song was playing at the credits roll of Critters 4? Because I don't. I got no fucking clue.
Critters 4 sucked overall.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that movie I couldn't wait to turn off anyways, but this one, I felt like it deserved to have that ending where, you're sitting there letting the credits roll because you're busy thinking about the movie, but this one, like, they started playing, and I was just like, and stop. Like, stop this music.
Whatever, I listened to the whole thing. Fuck y'all. I like that music.
That's what it comes down to. But yeah, it was assaulting almost, where it was just like, it snapped me out of any sort of thoughts I may have been having about the movie, and it sours the ending.
What would have been funny is it
along
ended
with that shitty shot. This is fucking terrible.
It would have ended and then the started shot. A Will Smith like theme song.
Yeah,
that's
what I found my cell phone, a crazy space ship.
Wild, wild space.
Wild, wild space.
Going to the dark.
That would have been the perfect credit scene.
Oh, dear.
I would have laughed, but it wouldn't have been
with
the
like one of the deadites in there or whatever, the dead people.
Man.
I think, let's
sat through that credit scene.
Yeah.
let's bring it back to the beginning of the film.
Okay.
And I thought this was funny when I first started. I had to jump back 30 seconds because I was like, oh wait, what? In 1997, they thought that we would be on Mars already in 2015.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wish we had a permanent base on the moon in 2015. That'd have been great.
Yeah, it was the moon, and then like 2024 or something like that. We started Mars, commercial mining on Mars.
When you watch old sci-fi movies, and they have like all these predictions of now.
It's depressing, like, is what it is.
Well, yeah, there's that, but I mean, like 2001, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And Thunder the Barbarian had better predictions of what the world would be like.
I'm even watching Parks and Recreation right now, and the final season was filmed in like 2014, 2015, and it takes place in 2017, and it's depressing. Because it's like, we don't have these cool phones with like the holographic, like, capabilities that those phones, and when you watch it, you're going, that's dumb, we're not going to be there in 3 years.
But now that we're actually there,
now we're actually here, it's like, dang it, come on.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah,
but we're getting close. I mean, you know, technology, when you do look at it from it, kind of, if you go back to the 1900, you know, the year 1900, like, just to now is insane, like how fast the technology is.
Oh yeah,
gone.
I mean, what, 40 years after we learned how to fly, we were on the moon.
Yeah.
Nuts.
And then we haven't done anything since.
I did like some of the, because you'll note that this does not have sort of the modern day space travel aesthetic of everything is white and clean and everything's holograms and digital screens and things. It's very low tech, high tech, right? Which I think was sort of a genre in the 90s to kind of show these. We have space travel, but everything still kind of looks steampunky and almost to get there. And I enjoyed that. There's a lot about this movie I thought was really successful.
It reminds me of like Star Wars versus Star Trek. And that Star Trek, again, you have like these ships that is everything is white and there's lens flares and, you know, everything's bright and lit up and whatnot. But you go to Star Wars and it's
gritty.
Like everything is dusty. I think the term one of the production designers used was like it's a used galaxy. Where like everything is pre-owned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it is. So, everything in Star Wars looks like we bought it secondhand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And like, yeah, there are those instances that we see in the movies where it is newer, nicer things and it is all white, like Princess Leia's ship and stuff. But then, yeah, you get down to like Han Solo's, you know, gross Millennium Falcon in comparison to the new version that
Excuse
we saw
me?
In Solo.
Excuse well, me? It, gross it Millennium Falcon?
Look at the interior of it from Solo and until A New Hope. Like, what the fuck did he do in there?
Yeah, dude,
like,
did not
it
take
it. Like 6 years.
it went from white to this like yellowish gray color. Like, it was just like, did you just let Chewie go run around in mud and then just roll around every surface? What did you do? But I like that used look too, especially like in this movie, because it feels more genuine. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're sending people years and years away to like Neptune as a rescue mission, they're not going to be in some like white pristine ship. They're going to be in like, it's going to look pretty terrible inside.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody would put any sort of ship in white or anything in white. Nothing's that clean anyway.
Honestly, the only thing the ship needed, and I feel as a former art guy myself, if I was a production designer, there would have been like a couple points where you would just like a big line of duct tape on the ship. like not asking like, is it holding a hose or part of the hull, or just it's just like a line of duct tape?
That's the only thing keeping us from space.
That's it. You know, we all know the reality is in nowadays in boats and airplanes and everything. Yeah, there's sort of like the pristine thing that they tell us all it's going to be, and there's the reality of, oh, we're out here. Who's got chewing gum? I got to plug this hole.
Hey, it did. When they were repairing the ship, it did kind of, maybe that was kind of futuristic duct tape because, you know, I was like,
they had like a cocking gun.
Yeah, when they basically got a cock gun and they're just like slapping these big patches down. We'll put 20 patches on it. That'll fix the whole ship.
Well, there's still some smoke here. Uh-oh.
Two more patches. That'll fix it.
Give me 5 more minutes. We'll be fine. We'll be fine.
I don't know why I made Cooper sound like that.
Can we talk just for a second of why this man, Dr. William Ware, had a million photos of Claire in his bunk?
That's the only question you want to ask.
That's what I want to ask, because I think it starts there. He's got four. He's got four that's in his bunk, and then he takes one off, and he's looking at it, and he's just like, my girl. And then he puts it over next to the shrine where there's about 40 to 50 more photos of her. I just found that very strange. I found it very strange.
I think I don't like to speak ill of other people in the film industry, but I think it's just a crappy attempt to show, oh, look.
Affection.
It's his loved one who's
gone. It's his obsession,
Yeah, well, and there's no other way to show this except with 70 photos.
I was like, photo would have sufficed, man.
Yeah.
To be fair, I mean, I did think it was weird at the beginning, but then by the time I understood what his motives were at the end, I was like, that's the least weird thing about Dr. Ware. I mean, honestly, he doesn't even seem like, I'm not even 100% sure he's a real person. He seems like a construct from the dark that was sent out to bring in more people. He lured people there. So,
see, that's actually one of my issues. Like I said, when I rewatched it, I was like, wait a minute, I started having problems with it. So, if he is a construct, then this offers up this whole weird thing, because that means since he created the gravity drive that makes Event Horizon work, Well, if he's a construct, then that means whatever is in the dark, the other dimension, hell, whatever we want to call it, had access here all along. So why do they need the gravity drive?
Well, there's no real... I thought for sure we were going to see him somewhere in the Bloody Orgy. Like, he had been there and died, and it brought him back and sent him back.
But that's it. See, it's like, if we say he was a construct all along, it doesn't make sense. If we say he was partly a construct, it doesn't make sense because somebody would have noticed. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't really buy that, oh, he died on the ship 7 years ago, but he's here now to help us find the ship.
Yeah, that's why
And if we say that, well, the ship was just influencing him from, what, 6 astronomical units away, and making him do all this, well, then what does it need any of this for? If it's got that kind of range, it can affect the whole goddamn planet. Yeah, so why is it luring like 6 people out here at a time?
And why wouldn't it just, why wouldn't it, if that's the case, why wouldn't it just take one of the people, take it over, and then take the ship back to Earth?
Fly home. Yeah.
Fly it home into Earth orbit and take over, turn it into a hell planet. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of this, I think the metaphor here is once evil has entered the world, right, it can't be returned back to from whence it came. Even if you're not necessarily the one that it touched, it's going to have an influence, right? So I don't know. He is the nearest relation to what happened to the crew on the Event Horizon that there is in the universe as we know it. So I don't know, like, because the thing is I kept asking, why is this happening? What's the purpose? Why is the dark doing this? And I think the answer is that it comes from a place of chaos, so there isn't a reason. There's no reason, right? Mm-hmm. It comes from a place that's hell. There's no motive, because all it wants is to cause suffering and to tap into fear.
I think so, I like that as an idea, but I think that is a tricky thing to do as a narrative, as a story, just because as human beings, we want reasons. We want to be able to go A,
but
B,
that's
C,
why it's
D.
scary, because we want reasons, and there isn't one.
It is, but the problem is, by the same token, yes, it's scary, it's also then immediately disposable, because it doesn't make sense. And again, maybe that's why, like I said on the rewatch, I started having tons of issues with, I haven't even touched on half my issues with this movie yet. But I like the idea, like, on an sort of an intellectual level of it's just pure chaos and, oh dear God, it has no reasons. And I think that is awesome and terrifying. But as a storyteller, I think, wow, it would be so tough to pull that off. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this movie does, because it doesn't commit to anything. It doesn't commit to saying, oh my God, it's pure chaos. And it doesn't commit to being rational, and it doesn't commit to being.
I think the one thing it commits to is saying, if you go to a place you're never meant to go to and you try and break the laws of physics and space and time, you're going to regret it.
Yes.
You're inviting something horrible into the world, into your world. So that's the only thing I really could read as a definitive theme.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with the fact that I don't think that Weir had any prior knowledge to it and wasn't involved. I think he was just sent to, you know, like it said, he happened to be the builder of it. They wanted to send him because there was a signal that came out. And I think once he got there, I think he grabbed a hold of him.
He was already a little crazy. Like, so, his level of obsession with his late wife / girlfriend, or whatever.
Yeah,
I fully expected her to have died on the as a member of the crew of the
Horizon. I thought at one point, I think when I first watched it, even when I rewatched this, I thought she was a member of the crew, because there's even a moment when we're seeing like the old logs, and somebody walks by who looks just like his wife.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I saw that too.
Yeah.
Maybe they just cut all that out too. Maybe they just.
They deleted a ton of stuff from this movie.
Yeah.
Basically an hour, because they turned it from like a 2.5 hour movie to an hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
They deleted everything that sort of explained the ongoing tension between Miller and Stark, the girl, Stark. The lieutenant. Yeah. Yeah, because the whole time I'm like, are they like together? Are they mad at each other? Like, what is his problem with her? Like, he was such a dick to her.
Miller was just a dick,
and it's because we're missing a scene about whatever their past relationship is, right? So
I always hate when they cut stuff out of movies but leave everything else.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Do you know? Okay, I'm gonna segue into a totally different movie for a minute, if you don't mind.
Hey, it's your show.
Keanu Reeves Hellraiser movie?
Yeah.
Hellblazer? The John Constantine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know Michelle Monaghan's in that?
Hmm.
No.
No. Hold on.
Yes, she is.
No, I mean, I didn't know.
Yeah, she is in it, and she was actually in a huge part of it. The only part that's still in it is the very, very end when he goes to the hospital and confronts all the demons. And has that whole speech about how, like, if you don't leave now, I will deport all of you. And he, like, holds his lighter up to the sprinkler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you see one female demon kind of look up and go, like, holy water? That's Michelle Monaghan.
Huh.
She is actually she was originally all through the movie. That she's playing another character from the comic books. And Succubus, that... basically Constantine bones on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Through it.
She's in the series too, isn't she?
Yeah. She's in the comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
Except they realized it's really tough for, like, oh no, poor Keanu Reeves. He's so lonely and sad and only gets to have sex with Michelle Monaghan once or twice a week. what a horrible life he has. And so they like cut her. They actually filmed, if you look at the DVD, there's all these cut scenes. They had like a bed scene together of the two of them in bed talking.
That's got to suck. And then not.
And then they cut that and rewrote it. So she had another scene when he walks into Papa Midnight's club. And it's the exact same scene. Like, they have all the same dialogue, except now they're sort of just talking as he walks through the club rather than when they're lying in bed together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut that.
So then she's just.
And so now she's just in the very end, except now, like, the fact that she's like, the whole idea is originally, wow, here's this woman that he's been having relations with for months, years, whatever. And he's openly telling her, I'll send you back to hell. That's it. This is the end. And now it's just this random woman going, oh, holy water. So that whole bit when he's saying, I will deport you, all of you. Is specifically for her.
Wow.
But now it's just a weird moment in the thing. I have not seen all the deleted scenes for Event Horizon, but it wouldn't shock me that we're seeing a lot of that here too. That,
yeah.
Like Winters is saying that, oh, there's a scene that explains this and that scene that explains that. But yeah, we cut it all. So now it's just people randomly being dicks to each other.
Yeah.
Which was very strange, because that's the first thing that I noticed from Captain Miller was, I was just like, this motherfucker is really aggressive, like right away.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, right. For playing angry. The quote hero of the film. He was such a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was hard to root for him until like the very end when you're just like
even the very end of the movie. Love, I was like, cool. Peace.
No, all love to Lawrence Fishburne. Like, I thought that there was a lot of range shown there. There were the moments where you could tell how much the crew mattered to him. But yeah, I mean, you lose a lot of context, and then you just have to be like, well, he's an ass 90% of the time. But
yeah. When he kind of gave his, like, you know, he was seeing the guy on fire, and he explains that whole backstory of leaving the guy behind as he was like
and
on
no
fire.
No
one ever knew. And then that, like, to me, that kind of explained away some of his, like, why he's so aggressive about, like, all of this. Because, like, he doesn't want to leave anyone behind. Like, right. I let that, you know, not knowing that there were, I guess, deleted scenes. I was like, okay, I guess it's a reason.
I liked him around the time he determinedly saved Justin. I thought for sure that kid was dead, you know?
The art kid?
Yeah. And then he stays super cool about it. And it comes down to he's not leaving anybody behind this time. And he saves Stark. Like, then you kind of see when he happens upon Stark towards the end of the film that he cares about her being alive, and he's not going to leave her like he left the guy that burned to death, right? So,
yeah. I mean, it's literally the same thing. The door is closing, and
people
I can
dying.
Let it close, or I can save you. Yeah. I can.
Yeah, it wasn't all so metaphorical as it was just hit you in the face with that. Yeah. Here's the exact same scenario.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we're hitting you with a metaphor.
Big sign. This is a metaphor.
It's like, don't be a menace to South Central. He's like the mailman message.
Yeah.
Every time something would happen.
You were saying, crap, what was that? I can't remember the name of the movie, but there was just this awesome scene. Like, oh my God, he's dead. Can't you hear the music?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You gotta love when movies don't take themselves that serious, or TV shows when they break the fourth wall like that.
When they're just that, yeah, we know what this means. We know.
There's a good moment in Scrubs like that, where every time something sad happens, a song that's like da 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 da, and at one point JD says like, anytime something sad happens, I always sing in my head. And then like something sad happens in that episode, and he does that, and it's just like, because I use that cue in every fucking episode, like three or four seasons before that joke.
Scrubs
like,
is so like, self-aware.
Yeah, it was so fucking. It's such a good joke. It's one of my favorites. Of that.
Honestly, I know it's stupid. One of my favorite bits in Scrubs is from the very last episode when they're talking about one of the new interns who's there is like, oh, I wasn't sure what the correct dosage was to give her. And the senior doctor's there. It's ibuprofen. It doesn't matter. You take a handful and you throw it at her head. And whatever goes in her mouth, that's the correct dosage.
I mean, I could do a whole podcast on Scrubs. I might.
You could. That's a thing could do.
I might.
Oh, we need more content.
Good.
Oh, man, I love that show.
Hypothetically.
Nudge.
That show had the best final episode ever that was then immediately ruined by a ninth season.
Well, that's like, I'm an Elementary fan, the Jenna Lee Miller, Lucy Liu show. I think it's amazing. And they just finished their sixth season, had a phenomenal finale. And then apparently what happened was like, they'd finished filming, the season began, and like two episodes aired, and CBS said, okay, you're picked up for another season. But we filmed a finale.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like a total, and it is. It's a gorgeous, beautiful season finale, series finale for the whole show. Like, oh, but we're gonna do one more season somehow.
Yeah, the Scrubs ninth season was a mistake, and it didn't last after that one. Because again, at that point, everyone had like started signing contracts to go do other things because they knew that was all they had. And then ABC was like, "Hey, that was a good thing that we just had. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Make some more money."
And they didn't. So anyway, so I'm talking about Scrubs, guys. I'm talking about Event Horizon.
What was that?
Can't wait to.
Okay, so here's my other Event Horizon point.
Okay.
Who the hell designs a ship like this?
Right? With the
every single aesthetics, ergonomics thing you've ever said, and who says, you know what? Maybe we should make the the sick bay look like a torture chamber.
Right. I thought the same thing.
Yeah, that everything about this ship is like, I totally get the idea that in a general sense, we're doing a movie that is like, what if there was a haunted house in space?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
That being said, who the hell designs a spaceship to look like a gothic castle? Every single room in this thing is a fucking... pardon my language. Are we allowed to swear on the podcast?
Please,
of course. Fuck no. Okay,
just
check. Yes.
Okay. But every single room in this thing is a nightmare. Like, you go into every room, and every room is like, the whole ship is designed by Geiger.
Well, so a lot of this movie was based on, especially for some of the designs of things, like the drive was based off of Hellraiser was a really huge influence on this movie. Also Event Horizon, the ship, was also based on apparently Notre Dame, like the church, and so it's supposed to have that like kind of gothic cathedral-y feel.
I've actually climbed to the parapet, it's literally in the notes of the IMDb page where it talks about it.
Yeah,
I don't think
it's on Wikipedia. I guess the
cathedral like thing was what it was supposed to be. Like. No, I thought it would have been interesting if we'd gotten some sort of like when we're looking at that the log footage. If we're talking about this earlier, like if the ship had been like the pristine look, and like whatever came back,
like silver and white, and
yeah, now it's all grungy because the power is out and like it's dark.
That would have been fascinating.
Wouldn't that been interesting? Like just the like it went in nice and it came back not so nice. It's been 7 years, so things could have happened, but obviously things did. But like I thought that would have been interesting. Like it came back.
That would have been interesting. You don't get to see much of the footage before. Mm-hmm. It's all dark.
I don't want to.
I don't want to see the death footage, but
not just the bloody orgy as it's called, but the even the prior to activating the gravity drive. Well, you don't see.
Are any of you familiar with Warhammer 40,000? I play the games. I've read a lot of the books. A friend of mine is super into it, and we have actually talked about the fact that this movie is very much like a Warhammer 27K. Movie that this is our first steps into the warp, that let's go into this other space that lets us travel through. Oh my god, there's a lot of stuff in this space that's awful. Oh dear god, we need protection. And I actually when I just rewatched this, I was actually telling my girlfriend, because she is much more recently into 40K, just over the past year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But I was telling her that my friend Marcus and I were like, you know, this is kind of a pre-40K movie in a lot of ways. And it was funny because he and I talked about it based off my memories of way back when, like I said, when I watched it under weird conditions. But watching it now, even more so, it's like you were saying that I would actually kind of like this movie even more if we found out that, it actually used to be a much cleaner... Mm-hmm. whiter ship, and it came back a little more Geiger-esque with all the skulls and random flesh piled up in the windows and stuff.
That was hilarious when she's like, I found a little bit of blood, and she's like rubbing a little spot on the floor, and behind her is like all these like skeletons and everything.
The weird mess, it was weird,
and no one ever responds to that. There's never a moment when she turns around like,
there had to be something that was cut out.
I found half the crew.
Right? I guess fatalities. After you have a floating body that's all fucked up in front of you that then shatters into like mesh, just grossness. Yeah. I guess maybe the mess on the wall is not that big of a deal anymore. I don't fucking know.
I don't know, man. Disgusting. If I would have seen that orgy scene and turn around and then be like, this is where it God. Like, instantly.
That was actually, though, my favorite scene in the movie is when Lawrence Fishburne watches the orgy scene and he just goes, "We're leaving."
Watching it. That moment is so good.
We're fucking out of here, man.
No hesitation. Nothing. We're leaving. We're out.
Smart.
Pete, I have a question for you. When I was reading The Fold, there were these moments where I was reminded of this movie specifically, of course, with the whole idea of like the folding the paper in half and the pencil going through and all that. But also, I mean, I remember in the spoilers, I guess, for people who haven't read The Fold.
Spoilers.
Was it Bob that walks through?
Please buy the book anyway.
Yeah, it's really good. It's phenomenal.
Despite what we're about to tell you.
Yeah. So when his name is Bob.
Does the beep and
when Bob walks through and he comes through and he's all, you know, he's fucked up or whatever, you know. Like that's what I was thinking. It was like, oh my god, like what did he pass through that fucked him up so badly? And I was like thinking about that also again when watching the movie, where I was like, maybe the ship wasn't this fucked up when it went through. I mean, obviously, in your book's a little bit different as far as like who's coming through.
The,
but
Yeah, the book. The weird thing is that I actually started the original version of The Fold, I actually wrote in college, which was back in 1990-something.
We missed that.
It was back
in... for the recording.
Weird. Weird things happening.
And then in... it would have been like, I guess, 2006 or 7, I picked it back up.
Yeah.
And was working on it again and pushed it aside to write X-Heroes, actually.
Oh, okay.
But the funny thing is, and believe it or not, since without giving it away, anyone who hasn't read the book, maybe plug your ears for a second. I actually know what happened to Bob.
Oh man.
The real Bob.
I'm sure he's fine. He's probably like on a tropical island somewhere living it up.
Yeah. Believe it or not, we would have found out what happened to Bob in X-Heroes book 6.
What?
What?
Which, okay, that leads me to another question real quick. So I just finished listening to Deadman and Other Tales or whatever it was. Deadman Can't Complain and Other Tales.
Deadman Can't Complain, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so there's an X-Heroes story in that book. Is that canon? Does that fall into your X-Heroes timeline?
Kind of. Weird thing that I actually wrote that story before I wrote X-Heroes.
God damn.
Oh, so it was like a precursor.
It is. What happened was I was kind of playing with X-Heroes, and you have to understand the time when I wrote like X-Heroes and all that stuff, I was the totally typical archetypal starving writer. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend and I were living in Los Angeles and pulling in like 20 grand a year. And anyone who knows Los Angeles and thinks, oh dear God, you were living off 20 grand a year in Los mm-hmm. Angeles combined is Oof. Horrified right now listening to this. So I had kind of plotted out X-Heroes, and I had the chance to write the story for the story. Deadman Can't Complain originally appeared in a book called The World is Dead, which was edited by Kim Paffenroth. And so I wrote that, and honestly, I wrote it and peppered a lot of X-Hero stuff into it. So when I then went to the publisher of Permuted Press, the press I could, by the way, you've already published a short story set in this world.
Wow.
That I...
That was your foot in the door. That's awesome.
It was that I kind of like, oh, by the way. And on it, I don't really have a problem with it being, considering that Deadman Can't Complain is like 100 years in the future. I'm not going to be around long enough to write stories that go that far. So if that is...
Spoiler alert. Come on.
Spoiler alert. I'm not going to live to be 160.
Wait a minute. What?
Probably.
No, Pete.
Not unless I can find the third key.
120 years later.
Okay. I was just, I was reading that, and it was just like, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. I'm like, George. Like, I know this.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting story. So I was curious, like, how is this
going to fall in? Tentatively canon.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was like, did this just spoil the rest of the series for me?
We understand. We've worked with you long enough to where we know you're like, you'll start something, and then you're like, well, I can't tell you anymore. Gotta.
Well, it's not even that. It's just
no,
it's
it makes
like,
sense. You know, you
I set a story 150 years in the future. Sure, it's canon. Okay, whatever. Absolutely, not one single character who's involved with any of this is going to be alive then. That character isn't alive now. Sure, it's canon. Okay, whatever. It's
no.
Well, that's just kind of a spoilery, like, well, I know how this whole series is going to end.
I know, yeah. Things kind of get better.
I think I'm just used to The Walking Dead where everything gets worse. And,
all the time.
And it's just like,
yeah. Never a happy
so the
ending.
End of The Walking Dead is all humans die, right? Because how
see,
the
was
fuck
actually,
else do you end
the
story?
From the minute I started X-Heroes, that's one thing I was really determined on, that it wasn't going to be one of those zombie stories.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's That's always cool. getting worse. It's always getting, oh my God, it's even more horrible now. Now things have become even worse because now we found out that zombies spread STDs. I don't know. You know, whatever. They, you know,
Jer got very concerned. Jer, is that a problem? Or the you fucking zombies or something?
Are you
bro?
Serious right now? Like in your books, you people are fucking zombies.
What?
Spread the STDs.
Yeah, but that's it. I just
buy the book to find out more.
Buy the book.
Find out.
You want the third book, but you need the first two to really understand.
That's what I want. On
someone, someone is going to go buy all these books, and then you're going to get a tweet that's like, "I was promised zombie fucking," and there wasn't any.
I want
one star Amazon review.
On the next pressing of the books, I want on the bottom of book one of X-Heroes, I want to say, zombies started the STDs. Origin, an STD origin story.
I actually found, dead serious, if you read, I have like a little a standalone thing, The Junkie Quatrain. And in it, actually, zombieism is an STD. In it, that the whole idea is when you contract the zombie virus, the two things it does, the first thing it does is massively lower your inhibitions. So whoever gets it just starts wanting to have lots of sex, wanting to do whatever. The second thing it does is it makes you hungry. There's and I'm blanking on the name of it, but you've probably heard of it. There's a genetic disorder where you never feel full.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So people who have this are always hungry. It doesn't matter how much they eat. It doesn't matter what they do. They're always starving.
I think that's, if I can remember correctly, I believe it's called marijuana.
It is a real disease.
It's called
it's a real disease, and the whole idea of it is that so in this, first your inhibitions start dropping, and then your hunger starts going up.
Mm-hmm.
And so invariably after a certain point, everyone who gets the disease starts attacking people.
That's a very interesting way to think about zombies.
Yeah. But the whole catch is that, of course, for those first week when your inhibitions are dropped, you are spreading the virus.
Right.
Quite freely.
That disease is called Prader-Willi syndrome.
Yes.
Genetic disorder due to a loss of function of specific genes. Yep. It kills people. Like it makes it where you can't ever live on your own because you don't know how to self-regulate.
Horrible. I saw a show once and they had a character who was in it and his sister basically just kept him tied to a chair all the time.
Jeez.
They had to padlock the fridge. I've seen people living with it. Their fridges are padlocked and their parents or somebody regulate everything they eat.
Because they feel like they're starving all the time. And they will just, if you leave them alone, they will eat every single thing in the fridge. They'll eat everything in your cabinets. They'll eat everything everywhere. And then once they're done with that, they'll go down to 7-Eleven.
They'll eat until they die. Right. I mean,
They'll either gorge themselves until their stomachs burst, or you'll have to tie them down and they'll just scream constantly about how hungry they are. That is like your two options.
It's like a horror film in itself.
Well, this just went.
So did you guys know that the budget.
Wow, this Event Horizon review just went really dark.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, just like the movie.
Did you guys know the budget for Event Horizon was $60 million? And this movie was not technically, it was a flop. It made.
Yes.
Really? $26 million at the box office.
$9 million on opening weekend.
Yeah. In 97.
It didn't do well.
Nope.
It didn't have great reception even after it was edited again.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of resentment from Anderson, to my understanding, because he kept touting these deleted scenes as being sort of what was missing to make the film great. But then they had lost a lot of the footage. Like it all went into that ether of, well, it wasn't maintained, and so it was lost. And then somewhere in like 2011, they found a VHS tape that was supposed to be the original cut that he intended. And they were going to watch it, and he didn't watch it. And then he claimed that it was deteriorated and wasn't watchable anymore. So I don't know. Like, I feel like to some degree, it was going to be a great film, but it got edited wrong. But there's no proof that it could have been a great film.
Yeah.
Just trust me.
Time to remake it.
Having been there on set, I think a lot of directors think their movie would have been phenomenal if not for the editors.
True.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are wrong.
Oh. Fair enough.
I'm looking at the stuff that he turned down to
X-Men. Turned down X-Men.
Yeah, good call, I feel, really, in the end.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Maybe.
Paul Anderson is, I don't know, he's not a very good director.
Oh, I thought you were going to, like, defend him for a second there, and I'm like, have you seen his
what?
What?
How we're talking about the guy who directed Resident Evil.
Yeah, Paul Weak Sauce Anderson.
Wait, are we talking about Resident Evil? Is that the other Paul Anderson?
No, he
changed his name.
It's the same Paul Anderson, right?
Okay, yeah. I have not seen Paul this W. movie Anderson. Before today. And when I saw that, I had no clue. I didn't see a trailer. All I knew was Sam Neill and what's Lawrence his name? Fishburne. Fucking Cowboy Bill or whatever.
Also, Alfred. Fishburne. Alfred was in it as well.
Lawrence Fishburne?
Yeah. Cowboy Ray. Or was it? What was his name?
Cowboy Lewis?
Cowboy something Lewis. Like, yeah. Either way. Like that. So this, I was watching. I was like, all right, cool. Here we go. Directed by Paul Anderson. And I'm like, all you hear was me doing the M. Night Shyamalan sigh. I'm like, oh. and then I gave it the benefit of the doubt. I was like, maybe this is like a different Paul Anderson. Maybe this is a successful one. Maybe and then I looked it up and it was like Paul W.S. I was like, fuck. Here we go.
God damn it.
Yeah.
This must have been before you met Mila Jovovich because she's not in the movie.
She's in every single one of his movies. When they announced that he was doing the Monster Hunter, I was like, oh, she's got to be attached. And then I went to the IMDb and I was like, yep, she's attached.
Yep.
They haven't, role to be determined. Like, they haven't even.
Honestly, though, I am seriously looking forward to her in the new Hellboy. That she's
in
the new Hellboy?
Is she in the new
she's
Hellboy?
She's the villain in the new Hellboy. Ooh. Yes.
She's, I've got nothing against her acting.
I got, she's a great actress. No. She's a great actress.
It's funny. It's kind of like basically how Tim Burton has his Helena Bonham Carter. You know, it's basically like every movie he's going to find a role for her.
But I think it's the difference between the ones who will only do a Tim Burton movie and the ones who, yes, I do Tim Burton movies or Paul Anderson
Helena
movies.
Bonham
and I
Carter
also do
other
stuff.
Stuff too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also do other stuff. Yeah. And that's it. I'm actually really excited to see Mila Jovovich as a villain. A villain. Yeah.
That'll be cool.
So
I'm pretty stoked for that Hellboy movie in general.
I am too.
Yep.
Listen.
Horns and pecks, guys. Horns and pecks.
Stop it. We got to finish this first.
Time to go into your fetishes.
Oh, yeah. This is like, we're still reviewing.
We don't have time for this.
Some thoughts about
it. I think last thing you had your other fetish come up too.
It's not my fault.
I need 1 minute. Sorry.
I'm going to step away for a minute.
Okay. While he's stepping away, let's go. What? Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask him if he,
he's gone
lots of
now.
Iconic imagery in this film, I would say, between the gravity drive room and the tunnel/meat grinder corridor. But did anybody else get this strong sense of the sphere? Like I felt.
Oh my God.
Very much.
Listen, you're going to bring this up. I was going to wait until the end, but that was the book that I read.
Oh my God. You didn't. Okay.
So the Michael Crichton book, The Sphere.
Yeah. So I was looking at the IMDb and I went and I scrolled down and I was like, more like this. And I was like, wait, why does The Sphere sound so familiar? And then I was like,
bitch.
Oh, that's the one I read. Not
but it
Event
is similar,
Horizon.
Isn't it? You're going to, yes. Now they're going to the depths of the ocean, but it might as well be deep space, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's a sphere there that things come out of, horrible, horrible things.
Yeah. And so that's why I got it kind of flip-flopped. I was like, The Sphere is what I read in high school. And then the movie came out and I was like, oh, I got to watch this.
I would definitely say it's an influence for this film.
The Sphere movie actually came out a year later. Yeah,
but the
year
book
later.
Came out 2-3 years before, 10 years Maybe, before.
Yeah, probably yeah, 10 years
before. Yeah,
Michael
Crichton's
been pushing out books since like the '70s. So,
but this is one of those things where it's kind of like
Beyond the Grave.
In the '90s,
like Tupac of authors.
Yeah, yeah. In the '90s, we had movies that came out with similar tones, right? So we had like Armageddon, and then we had Deep Horizon or Deep Impact.
Yeah,
and so like. I think that's what probably happened was like Event Horizon was like, oh, we're going to make a movie and put it out before The Sphere. Shit like that. But who wrote this?
But,
was it?
But the actual Sphere book has been around for much longer.
Right.
You know.
But in Hollywood, you know, you jump on what's going to be popular.
Mm. And his, God, Michael Crichton, sorry, has been putting out books since 1966. His last book came out last year called Dragon Teeth. He's had three books come out since his death.
He died in like the 90s, didn't he?
No. He died in 2008. He died 10 years ago.
If you don't think that's going to be Stephen King straight up, then you are wrong. Because that guy has got more fiction sitting on his desk just waiting to be published than anybody.
Sphere came out in 1987, so 10 years before this movie.
That's what I'd like to know. So. That's what I'd like to know about Pete is like, are you planning? We're just talking about books coming out after authors' deaths. Do you?
No,
we'll set up the conversation for you. He didn't read.
Since
the
you
book
stepped
the
away
movie.
For a minute, let's talk about your death.
Let's recap very quickly.
Jared didn't read. He didn't read Event Horizon, the book. He read Sphere. He realized Sphere. By Michael Crichton. And Michael Crichton, we were talking about, has been releasing books forever.
It's a very different book.
Sphere came out in 1987.
But is it? That's the thing, though. There is a lot of similarities between what's going on in the Sphere and what goes on. You know, that's why, because that's how it came up, is I was like, does anybody else feel like looking at that orb, the gravity drive in the film, you got a sense of the Sphere, you know?
I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
I mean, it's this thing that horrible stuff comes out of in the depths of the ocean / space.
Your subconscious, it reflects things in your,
So anyway, so he read the wrong book or whatever. He read the right
book. I read the right book.
And then we were like, oh, Michael Crichton's been doing shit since like the 60s. And he continued to do things even after he was dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So he died 10 years ago and his most recent book came out last year. So do you have any books?
Do you have books that you are going to, are you going to line them up to where you're like, you know what, don't know when I'm going to go, but if I do, I'm still going to release a whole bunch of shit.
Well, I mean, I think the catch for any of this is it depends on like how much you've got done.
Mm-hmm.
And then the small press I was involved with, one of their bigger authors actually committed suicide like after his second book. And then it was this big thing that, okay, but he had like 50 pages of notes left for a third book.
Mm.
So what do we do with this? And then even after the third book, they said, oh, and now here's a unconnected fourth book set in that universe.
Written by whom? His son?
No, just by another author from that the press contracted.
Yeah, because that's a thing. Tolkien's still releasing new books because most of it's his son finishing his works.
That's just it.
Robert Jordan's son releases new books.
It's always a weird thing with, you know, however, whatever author, how they set up their rights, how they, you know, what they'd done in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, somebody could comb through my computer and probably find notes for.
I have dibs.
Windrush could comb through my computer and find notes for like a dozen books, some more than others. And then it just becomes the question of how much of this becomes, you know,
yours.
Peter Klein with Windrush, and how much of the work is she actually doing for all of these? Mm-hmm. Arthur,
just keep that in your mind. Peter Kline's with Windrush.
Arthur C. Clarke put out a ton of books late in his life with other authors, and having read a lot of them, I do wonder like how much Arthur C. Clarke was actually involved in any of them. Past a basic cursory, yes, that reads like a book, you know.
The grammar is okay.
I have gone through it. This is definitely 300 pages. So.
It passes as a book.
I don't know. I think it's a questionable thing. I know a couple authors who push the idea of, and when I die, I want everything thrown in an oven and burned.
Jesus.
So no one can ever use it. And I know people who are, I'll map out everything so someone can take over after I die. And write the next 27 books that I planned out. You know,
yeah.
I would love to say that I have anything planned out that far in advance, but like I said, you could probably squeeze a dozen books out of random notes I've got for stuff.
Are there authors like how Michael Jackson was when he died? There was actually this huge catalog of songs that he had recorded that he just didn't think was good enough to release, but he had fully recorded them and just kept them for his own private.
Same with Prince.
Yeah.
Prince. Yeah. I don't know if that's as much a thing anymore, because nowadays, because there are so many avenues to release stuff, what would be the point of not releasing something that...
If you didn't think it was good enough.
Well, there's that. Yeah, but in which case, then it should never be released. But, you know, if I, for whatever reason, wrote something right now, like, okay, total honesty, I have a vampire series I've wanted to write for a while.
Do you tell.
I do. I have a vampire series.
Another one of her fetishes.
It's a three-book series. It's kind of outlined. Not really giving anything away. It is about a guy who is in a horrible car crash, has to get a heart transplant because he finds out he has a horrible heart defect that never affected him until this crash. He gets a heart transplant. After the heart transplant, he starts seeing, hearing, experiencing weird things. And what he comes to find out is he has gotten a heart transplant from a vampire.
Whoops.
But how?
Because the dead body in the morgue had not passed its 3 days until it rises. The heart out of the body in the morgue. That body rose without a heart. He woke up suddenly on the operating table feeling absolutely fine. And
so
now
is he dead? Is he not? Is he?
That's just it. One of the whole things in it is that as he encounters different supernatural creatures and they're like, what the hell are you? You smell weird. But the fact is, every time I have this whole thing plotted out. I have like three books plotted out over like 20 pages of notes. But every time I pitch this to my agent or my editor, they're like, I will start pitching, well, there's this guy and he's in love with his wife and they're doing this and his wife gets killed in a car crash and there's this horrible trauma and he has to go through heart surgery and then it turns out it's a vampire and the minute the vampire word comes up,
sorry, you're about 10 years too late on the vampire train.
We need like another 5 years.
Anne Rice just released another book.
We need another 5 years for vampires to become cool again.
Oh, dear.
Thanks a lot, Twilight.
Yeah.
Really ruined it.
But that's it. So there's all those notes sitting around. Pardon me.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Bless you, sir. Here comes again. The return. The sneeze. Part two.
My soul is determined.
Will we get a third? We going to get a third?
Nope.
Oh, two-book series. The sneeze.
Got that damn soul back where it belongs. It's not.
All right, so
we were talking about Event Horizon, right?
Listen, like, we're gonna go. Yeah. We're gonna finish this damn podcast.
Can I toss out one more thought on Event Horizon?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this because I think one of the problems Event Horizon has, it doesn't know who its lead is. Mm. That I think at the time,
that's fair.
And my mind just turned totally blank. Professor Jurassic Park.
Sam Neill,
thank you.
Alan Grant
was the big name in this, really. That Lawrence Fishburne at the time had basically done Pee-wee's Playhouse and the chess movie, Searching for Robbie Fisher. That was like his claim to fame at this point. And Sam Neill had been in Jurassic Park just like a year or two earlier. But really, if you look at the story, Sam Neill is not the main character.
Fair.
And so we have this weird imbalance of Hollywood logic tells us to focus on Sam Neill. Story logic tells us to focus on Lawrence Fishburne. And I think that's one of the awkward things that has us sort of tripping in the story up until much later. So by the time we realize which one we're supposed to be focusing on, you know, we've started ordering pizza or folding laundry or something. So.
I mean, I'll agree that the beginning of the film definitely says, look at Sam Neill. Sam Neill is who you're supposed to look at.
Well, I don't know. I'd argue to say that they
it
said to look at
Sam
Claire.
Neill. Literally, the movie starts with Sam Neill.
Yeah. So. But I think by the time we meet the crew, I feel like it just becomes an ensemble cast. You know, everybody. Because for a while there, I was very focused on Justin, because Justin went into the black hole and he came back out, and we were waiting for him to sort of come to and say what he saw, right? And then, you know, he died. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot about this movie I actually really enjoyed. I just wasn't afraid very often in it, but I thought that it did a really good job of doing, what did I wrote in my notes, I said, the film taps into sort of that universal great horror that a story can utilize. It is the fear of the unknown, the darkness beyond all knowing, all vision, all ability to access, right? The deepest depths of ourselves, of space, of darkness, whatever. Now, the metaphor is heavy, but I mean, I thought that in that
you
way.
You got a lot out of this one.
Well, I mean, I thought about the sphere, and I thought about a Heart of Darkness a little bit, you know, looking into these deepest fears and being a changed person for it. I feel like there were so many elements that could have made it a really, really amazing film. And yeah, I just got confused somewhere along the way. It's a bit like my early writing, like when I was in college. It had a potential, but it went nowhere.
You know what? That's actually, honestly, that's a great analogy for it. This feels like the early work of someone who would do great stuff later.
Yeah.
That there's a bunch of great elements here. There's some cool stuff. There's a great cast. There's all this, but it, like, the storyteller just does not know how to put it together. Mm. And you can call that storyteller the director, the editor, the producers, whoever you want, but whoever they are, they don't know how to put this story together.
And I get the sense of not putting it together, they thought was the edgy thing to do. Like, let's just leave a bunch of open ends because it's progressive. It's scarier.
It's the 90s.
Look how hip we are in the 90s.
So let's wrap it up. Let's go around the room. Share our final thoughts. Give it a score out of 5 and end this 8-bit horror fest with a bang.
All right.
We'll start with we'll start with Windress this time.
Oh dear. I would give it 3 meat grinder hallways out of 5. Say when or 2.5.
When I saw that, all I could think of was the like state fair, and I was just like, oh,
I thought somebody was gonna die there. I was like, somebody gonna die in this corridor.
Honestly, I kept thinking of Galaxy Quest with the this has no purpose.
Why would anybody put this on a ship?
Like, and in the again on the IMDb like trivia stuff, I think that said that they designed it. Another one of those designing things where apparently it was supposed to represent the levels of hell, like in Dante's Inferno. Right. And I was like, bullshit, how?
What?
Yeah. Like, it's nothing happens there.
It's Dante's Inferno. Make up your mind.
Yeah. I was like, I read that and just been like, I know.
This represents the sorrow I felt in fourth grade when.
When it had to walk to the bathroom.
Turned me down to the school dance.
No. All right.
That's what this hallway represents.
My score is dropping. All right, 2.5. 2.5 meat grinder hallways.
Yeah, I thought you were going to give this a 4.
Yeah.
Nah, not after all this discussion. Now I feel less.
Oh, that's funny.
Peter?
Like I was just saying, I think there's a lot of really good stuff in this movie, but I don't think any of it comes together. This really, the whole movie to me feels like a bunch of the throwing everything at a wall sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That we've got a ton of great ideas and just nobody spent the time to make them work as a singular story, a singular movie. So honestly, I mean, I love the characters. I think it's Sam Neill is awesome as the tormented scientist who becomes the insane scientist. I love Lawrence Fishburne. I love Lucius Malfoy as the scientist.
Jason Isaacs, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So many, that's just it. There's so many great actors in this, everything. Yeah. They're all fantastic.
Alfred from Gotham.
Yeah. You know, Sean Pertwee, son of John Pertwee, Doctor Who.
Doctor.
But at the end of the day, it is just kind of this jumble that the longer you look at it, the less sense it makes. Mm. So I think the best I can give it is 2.5 empty eye sockets out of 5.
Half of an empty eye socket. Half an empty eye
socket. Yummy.
To your point too, Pete, it not only feels like a jumble, but you wonder, would the 2.5-hour version have been more cohesive or even less cohesive?
Yeah, that's just it. It's at one of those things where it's at this weird balancing, but I honestly don't know.
I'm going to call it.
Could something have saved this?
I'm going to call it and say it would be even more just nonsense, just fucking weird shit. You're just like, you're left with it and you're like, man. So that's why I would say that this to me seems like a book that I would read back in high school. Just saying.
It is a book you read in high school. Sort of.
Well, yeah, but
it's just not the book of this movie.
I think it would have made a great book to read, you know, if the story was fleshed out and had an author. I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it 2 bloody orgies, death orgies out of 5.
Fun fact about the bloody orgies.
There, okay.
Wasn't the director wasn't.
It was Brad Pitt's original screen premiere.
It was a different director that shot a lot of the bloody orgy scenes, and he employed both amputee actors and porno actors to make it more realistic and scary. Yeah.
Nice.
So
that's kind of awesome, actually.
I thought it was kind of cool.
I thought that
NC-17 version must be awesome.
I thought that sounds
weird, but now I kind of want to watch that part again. Yeah.
If you look in there, Kev,
Caligula in space,
and Kevin and Doug, I think we see Ryan putting his hand in someone's mouth.
Oh yeah, just a nub.
Yeah,
going
just a
in.
Nub going in. All right, we'll go next, Kev. We'll go ahead and wrap this up.
For my first time seeing this movie, like legitimately, I enjoyed it for what it was worth. It was definitely, I saw the flaws, especially in visual effects, but I mean, that's 1997. Yeah. And you,
it was, anything is better than Leprechaun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Coming off of Leprechaun, I mean, that's
fantastic. Literally last night, because it was last night, Ed and I were watching it, and Ed was like, God, the CG in this is fucking terrible. And I was like, it's not great, but. Let me show you what I've watched so far this month.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so much better than I showed him. He's like, that's like a video game. It's fucking terrible. I was like, yeah, dude, it sucks.
So I enjoyed it for what it was worth. You're right. There was a lot of stuff that was left on the cutting room floor because a lot of the story didn't make sense. But once again, for me personally going into this, I didn't know Paul W.S. Anderson directed it. As soon as I saw that, I was like, fuck, here we go. So my expectations lowered as soon as I saw his name because of the past history I've seen from him. But I was pleasantly surprised for a Paul W.S. Anderson movie. I enjoyed it. Not enough to really revisit it. I feel like I've seen it that one time and I don't know. I think Sam Neill was fantastic in it. Lawrence Fishburne was pretty good too, but man, Sam Neill stole it. And yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I got to give it 3 failed pickup lines from Cooper out of 5.
Nice. Doug?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to echo what everyone said. It's one of the better movies we've watched this month, but it's not necessarily one of the best horror films out there.
It's no Jason X.
And Jason X, I think, so far has been our top rated movie we've watched, with maybe the exception of Pandorum, because I don't think any of us were expecting that movie to be.
No, I think Pandorum is probably my favorite movie this year of the Horror Fest.
Yeah, definitely the favorites of the ones that were the two that actually tried to take themselves seriously out of the 5 that we've done, because the other 3 were. Jason X, Critters 4, and Leprechaun 4. So, I mean, Jason X wins the other ones by leaps and bounds, but
are you saying Critters didn't try to take itself seriously, man?
Oh, God, I hope not. Jesus. But there are still some parts in this movie that are creepy, and it's a story that I like. I like the story, like, or what basic what story there is. Yeah, like the whole using the ship to bend space and time to travel, and somewhere in between something got fucked up and something came back. Like, all of that is for me, like, a premise of a good story. And if you want that story, go check out Peter Klein's The Fold. That's, in my opinion.
That sounds good.
When I was reading that book, I was reminded of this movie, but I liked the book way better because it was just like
cohesive.
It was cohesive, and it made sense, and there was it was easy to follow along, and there wasn't that many blood orgies, so it worked out really well.
I was hoping for a couple on that one.
I'm trying to sell your book, man.
thank you.
But yeah, I even though like we complained about the beginning at the very or the end at the very beginning of this podcast and the issues with how just abruptly it ended and it kind of took away, I still overall enjoyed it. Like, it still has its creepy moments. Mm-hmm. And again, Samuel's performance is phenomenal in this movie. I think I like him a little bit better in this movie than I liked him as Grant in Jurassic Park. Yeah, I don't know. There's just something.
That really won him over.
I think he did a better job, like showing his acting
than he did
in that one. Because in Jurassic Park, he's just very like stoic, and dinosaur. You know,
Jurassic Park is like the greatest dad joke ever when he grabs the electric fin. Oh, let's see.
Oh, him. Yeah.
That's true. I fucking love it. I think Jurassic Park is a better movie. Like, and it came out 3 years before that, and the CG in that movie way better than anything in this one.
You know what? I actually realized. Can I interrupt just for a second?
Yes, go ahead. I have to think of a funny quip to end it on.
Well, no, okay. So do your funny quip, and then I'll
no. I have to think. I have to think of it. I have to think of it.
Your funny quip. I actually totally bizarre thing the way this times out. The woman who I was dating, who I broke up with during Event Horizon, was a lighting designer. And she and I had actually had many talks about the fact her mentor, the guy that she had worked for a while, had worked on Jurassic Park. And one of the reasons the CG in Jurassic Park looks so good is they brought him in as lighting designer, and he was looking at their original footage and saying, okay, here's the problem. Your lighting in this shot, the people are being lit this way, but the dinosaurs being lit this way. And your mind registers the fact that this is like a different light sources on these things. And that was honestly, when she had told me that back then, it was something I started becoming very aware of with a lot of CG. And I think that is one of the reasons in this, when there are some really cool shots in the beginning of this, like all the stuff floating around the empty ship.
Yeah, it looked cool, but the light sources were wrong, and some things looked way too shiny.
Light sources, right. Mm-hmm. You know, or the light's coming from the wrong direction for what it is. And even if it's just a little bit off, we register that.
Yep.
You know?
Again, it made things look too shiny, because you're going through a shadow right now.
Or everything else is going through a shadow, but this isn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyways. I just wanted to bring that up.
So I guess I'm going to rate this 2.5 splayed open Jason Isaacs in the operating room out of 5. Apparently one of the deleted scenes and or I guess rewrites in this movie was apparently Jason Isaacs had written a backstory for his character that explained the long scar. Like, they were all asked to write their character's backstories. Yeah. So the long scar was supposed to be he had like some traumatic surgery experience when he was a child. So apparently, I guess that was one of his greatest fears, was being ripped open.
And then he was
about the surgery he had. So he was supposed to be ripped open and splayed out like that. But apparently, and originally, his guts were supposed to still be attached to his body. And that when what's his face? Oh my God, Lawrence Fishburne walks in, he was supposed to raise his head up and like scream at him because he's still alive. And Lawrence Fishburne had to put him down, but they cut that out because they said it was too much. Which I'm like, no, are you kidding me? That would have been great.
Remember, people were fainting in the first showing.
That might have been why. Because that would have been fucking terrible.
That would have been pretty intense. Mm.
That would have been really intense.
Forward to 2017, and that's on network television.
Well, yes, that's true.
That wouldn't
like,
have been.
No, the new American Horror Story this week or last week.
Oh, yeah, American Horror Story.
Had
yeah,
a scene just like if not worse, but it was full out, like gore.
You talking about the in hell where the dude stabs a guy and goes up and then he's just rip open and fall
Stop
on the
it.
Floor. Yeah,
Stop
that
it.
Was.
That's what I said in the messenger earlier today because I had just finished watching Event Horizon. Well, this was scarier in the time before I watched Hostel and Saw and like The Hills Have Eyes. Like, I'm sorry, but now I was just kind of like,
honestly, at this point, it's like before I watched Castle and you know. Like everything, really, all the gore in this is kind of timid.
Well, but it's 1997.
So, yeah, but that's just it. I mean, for 20 years, you wouldn't think we'd get this much more graphic. But is there really anything in this that you wouldn't expect to see on?
And Hellraiser came out before this, and Hellraiser is pretty.
Hellraiser came out like 10 years before.
Like 10 years before, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it was a studio getting involved and trying to make this almost like the Venom movie now, where it's like it could have been so much more if they'd gotten that R rating, but they wanted it to bring in more of an audience, so they may have cut things out to try to bring more people in. I mean, again,
this
the original
was R rated.
Sure, but the original rating was an NC-17, which by now today's standards, an NC-17 minus
PG-13.
I mean, that's half the reason Anderson turned down doing like the X-Men and some other movies, because he wanted to do an R-rated movie, and this would allow him to do an R-rated movie. Like that was what Wikipedia said his reasoning was.
Yeah.
What were the Resident Evil movies? Were those R?
There was R.
Yeah. Were they?
They had to do R because even the games are M-rated, so it's hard to pull off like a PG-13 rated movie out of a NC like a out of a 17 and over video game.
I was just trying to think of like anything super graphic one way or another in
the person getting cubed.
Yeah, the guy getting cubed was awesome.
Yes, but he kind of gets cubed like in the foreground. You don't really see it.
Yeah,
like,
you see the splits. Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you see like a blurry reflection of the background. At one point, I think you might see one of Mila Jovovich's nipples at one point.
At that scene, actually, where he's getting cubed, she was just like, oh my.
No, I think like when she wakes up in the shower.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
But that's what I mean. It's like from the what would get you an R rating, I think it's probably just
nipple
into R
and
rating.
The swearing and, you know, just the excessive violence. But it's funny because, like, you know, going back and my wife has just never seen any of the Marvel movies. So earlier in the year, we actually started and from the very beginning and kind of watched up till now.
With David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury.
Then, yeah, right. No, not that very beginning. I'm sorry. Wow. No. This generation's Marvel, not
the MCU.
MCU. Yeah.
MCU Marvel.
So, yeah. And the funny thing is, like three or four movies into it, she's like, how the hell are these not rated R movies? Like, the violence in this, like, people are getting killed left and right. And you think about it, like, in the 90s, these movies would have been, R-rated. Like, these superhero movies would have been rated R.
Probably hands down.
Yeah, that's why you look at like Spider-Man, like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man being so harmless, you know, like against the supervillain, yes. But I mean, like just normal stuff that's going on, it's not as like dark.
But even you look at like Ed Norton's The Incredible Hulk, and like they don't show it, but there's definitely implications that like dozens of people are getting crushed and murdered and slaughtered, like just off camera constantly through that movie. So. I mean, hell, he kicks that guy into a tree.
No, God.
Yeah,
that's, he's fine.
Yeah.
He walked it off.
Yeah, he walked it off.
He walked it eventually.
He was fine.
Eventually.
Okay.
I always had a little body horror moment in the Iron Man. It was Iron Man 2 where Justin Hammer is trying to replicate Tony's tech, and he's got that suit that guy is in, and then it just like the waist of it just twists all the way around and the guy screams. I had a whole body horror moment in that film at that, because I was like, Jesus Christ, because the implication is it just turned that guy 180. So anyway, sorry, that was a deviation. I
still hold that is the guy they're talking about in Doctor Strange.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, at the beginning of Dr. Strange, when they're talking about the officer with the spinal injury, mm-hmm. I still say it's that guy from Iron Man 2.
Yeah, because Steven saved him, right?
Personal hand.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't save him because they're talking about it, and then he crashes his car. And
right.
His hand's mangled. So.
Well, he was on his way to perform that surgery. Sorry, anyway. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Listen. We will find out.
What were we talking about this week?
We will find out. We're going to discuss this more about the Marvel. Just announced today on Marvel Tomorrow is the new podcast featuring Windrus and Peter. So tune in for that.
What? Yes. The whole podcast is about Marvel?
We are so down for this.
Let's do it.
You guys are more than welcome to.
I have a lot to say about Wolverine's return to...
We can talk for hours about this.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to get...
Movies versus cartoons versus...
We're going to finish this off. We're going to thank everybody for tuning in. This is it. This is the end of 8-Bit Horror Fest 2018. We hope that everybody enjoyed what we had for you this year, and we hope that you went and explored and watched these movies right along with us. Always let us know in the comments and over on Discord and everything like that what you thought of it and what you thought about this year's lineup. And we're always taking suggestions for next year's theme. And we want to thank Peter for coming on. Make sure that you go check out his books, follow him on social media. What is the information? Where can they find you, sir?
Really simply, I am at Peter Klein's Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Follow me there where I will swear and Marvel will fire me.
So, yeah.
Oh, wait, was that too soon?
Now because it just happened, but on October 31st, people...
Yeah, time will have passed. Oh, that's right. But yeah, I'll still be angry about it.
Then forget that. Just follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Peter Kleins.
And then, of course, we have Windrus. Thank you so much for coming on. Both of you are absolute joy to have on the show. And you propel it so much further than we would because of the fact that we're sitting right now at about an hour and a half of a review of a film. And just the three of us alone, it would have been 30 minutes and we would have been done.
Yeah, which movie did we do by ourselves? Was that Leprechaun 4? I think it's one that we didn't do. It was just the three
it's
of us.
Possible. And, it was just it like, was like
a,
you know,
it was like a we were like wrapping review. It up in like 5 minutes. We're like, yeah, just get it over. The movie sucked.
Sucked. The end.
So I got to say, having you both on, it really is a treat because of the fact that it, mm-hmm. not only for us to listen to you both kind of interact, because you both bring so much knowledge and depth to what we do, you know, but the fans obviously really enjoy it. You know, they love having the longer format and seeing your insights into everything. So Windrus, where can everybody find you as well?
Oh, well, I am on all of the social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as Windrus Cosplay, or I think on Twitter, I'm just Windrus, WINDRESS, two S's. and if you wanted to see me in person, I'll be at Alamo City Comic Con at the end of the month.
That may have already passed.
Alamo City?
Yeah, because yeah, this is coming out in the future.
Wasn't that a couple days ago?
That was a couple days ago.
It's the future. You may have already seen me at Alamo City Comic Con. I competed in the cosplay contest. And,
oh, yeah? How'd you do?
Won.
Did you win?
Did you
win it?
I won it. Oh, no.
Congratulations.
But you got so close. You got.
Yeah, let's do part two.
Different reactions. Oh, man, maybe next year.
Just cut out whatever. Oh, so close.
It's like the Walking Dead thing where they had to make like 8 different death scenes for like everyone. Just use the right one.
Just in case. No, it's cool. Whatever happens, happens. And I expect to have a great time. I'll be debuting... or have already debuted my Mrs. Incredible costume.
Which looks fantastic.
So thank you so much. And so hopefully the kids will get a kick out of that one. A lot of my characters that I cosplay are very obscure and comic-based, so a lot of kids don't recognize them. So this is one that I think will be really fun for kids to see because they'll know who she is. So,
awesome.
Check out the various social media feeds. I'm usually posting on 8-Bit Geeks social media too, so And I'm in the Discord server. Everybody come join the Discord server.
Yes.
Yay. Yes.
Awesome. Until next year, until next 8-Bit Horror Fest, we will see you later. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.